Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And the premise for our good martini, obviously, is horrific, and that's the shooting on Thursday at Umpqua Community College outside of Roseburg, Oregon. A 26-year-old gunman who is now dead is responsible for the deaths of 10 students there. Seven others were injured. There is a lot of information being known about him now through his online activities, a fan of the IRA, Nazi Germany. He's got few friends, but one of them seems to be a jihadi sympathizer. And from what we're hearing from students who did survive in that classroom is that he asked people to stand up and he asked if they were Christian. If they said yes, he shot them in the head. If not, he shot them in the leg. And the president of the United States came out shortly after this yesterday, evening time, East Coast. And most of the things he's getting attention for is when he said, yes, I am politicizing this. We need more gun control legislation. But he also said this, which ultimately led to a pretty robust discussion this morning on Morning Joe. But first, here's the president's comment.
I'd ask the American people to think about how they can get our government to change these laws and to save lives and to let young people grow up. And that will require a change of politics on this issue. This is a political choice that we make to allow this to happen every few months in America. We collectively are answerable to those families who lose their loved ones because of our inaction.
So, Jim, it's all of our faults. And then that sentiment carried over to the set of Morning Joe, where Mika Brzezinski, Howard Dean, Mark Halperin were talking about how, yes, we have to do something. And so Charles Cook, your colleague at National Review, had this to say.
Joe Biden doesn't know how to fix this problem. I don't know how to fix this problem. I think it's fair to say you don't know how to fix this problem. It's a very complex question in a country with 300 to 350 million guns on the street. And the way they talk is as if they have the answer and there are just these recalcitrant forces in the country that say no, no, no.
And Mark Halperin tried to confront Charlie Cook and it didn't go so well.
I completely agree with the president. People need to find solutions to this and not talk about what won't work and that it's so complicated. Well, we can't be the only country in the world that's like this.
All right, well then, with respect, what's your plan?
Well, I think that finding solutions are short-term in terms of legislation, state and federal, but then also
coming up with ideas. Mark?
I think some of the... Well... We can talk about specific policy in a second, but let me just finish a second point. You know, you say part of the issue involves young men. Well, again, public policy people should come up with ideas longer term to try to deal with the question of what is causing young men to do this and how can we stop it.
Agree that they should. So you don't have any more ideas than I do,
I'm not an expert in the field. And again, I don't want to be civil. I'm not trying to criticize or attack you.
I'm not an expert in the field, and since you're calling me out on the fact that I don't have any ideas, you're not being civil if you call me out for the fact that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, there are times that you see somebody basically get pantsed on national television, and you feel a little bad for him. I don't feel that bad for Mark Halperin here, and it's not just because Charlie Cook is my colleague, and I generally like him, even though he picks on some people sometimes. Charlie makes the very basic point that there isn't a law. The only law you could pass that would guarantee that what happened yesterday never happens again is a total, complete ban and confiscation of all firearms, right? We will know more about this killer, but in all likelihood, you know, mass shooters almost never get their guns from a gun show. So the whole talk of we need to close the gun show loophole is totally irrelevant to most mass shootings. The assault weapons ban is not relevant. I don't believe any of the guns that he was using yesterday qualified under the assault weapons ban. But there's this rallying cry, we need to do something. Okay, what? Something. You know, and Halperin is there yelping about the need for passion on this issue. No, there's plenty of passion on this issue. What there isn't is a lot of good, detailed, specific ideas that would actually have prevented these sorts of things. And what it is that we have, you know, people who have deeply disturbed problems who managed to hide those problems well enough. People always, you know, they always say, oh, he was a loner, he kept to himself, things like that. You know, no one ever has this tendency of wanting to actually report something. As we saw in the Virginia Tech shooting, when you do report something, universities insist, hey, there's nothing we can do, we don't want a lawsuit. Or you end up in a situation with Ahmed and the clock, right? If you report something and it's not a threat, suddenly you're the paranoid, terrible person who's, you know, everything that's wrong in society. This is a very deep, depressing issue, but there's something deeply satisfying about watching Charlie Cook expose that all of these, you know, pundits are like, oh, we have to do something. Don't really know what to do. They just want to be able to back some bill so they can feel better about themselves. And that's not a good way of making good policies.
Yeah, Mika tried later, and ultimately Charlie asked her what she wanted to do, and she finally got around to saying that she agreed with the vice president, which we established at the beginning of Charlie's first clip. He didn't have any specifics either. So interesting, though, Jim, that the president basically figured out that for the rest of his presidency, he's not going to get his gun control agenda through a Republican Congress. So he basically blamed the American people for electing a Republican Congress and said, you come up with solutions.
Also worth noting, by the way, that the president mentioned Australia. Australia's policy was basically national gun confiscation. Oh, sure, there was a buyback program, but you didn't have a choice of keeping your gun. And I think it was about a million guns got taken away. So if you want to, you know, if President Obama wants to propose national gun confiscation, you go right ahead, Mr. President. If Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley want to run on this, you guys go right ahead. I would love to see that because I can't think of anything more that would more certain guarantee a Republican victory in 2016 than the Democratic nominee saying we need to confiscate all privately owned guns in this country. We need the FBI to go house to house, room to room, to every residence in America to make sure that we've collected them all. So
a couple other points here before we move on to the bad martini. Kudos to the sheriff out there for refusing to say the name of the shooter. If you want a hero in this story, it's Chris Mintz. He's a man in his early 30s. He's an Army vet who charged the shooter and took about anywhere from 5 to 7 bullets, depending on the report. Ultimately, it's the police, I guess, that took out the shooter. But Chris Mintz, definitely a hero, probably saved quite a few lives in this situation. So kudos to him, and he deserves a lot of recognition. And let's hope that the shooter ends up in anonymity very, very quickly. One other thing, and I know that you love chat rooms and comment sections, Jim. seems like one part of this story is that this shooter got onto some sort of conversation board, and there were people on there actually giving him tips on how to carry this out. So, I mean, obviously there's free speech, and there's I guess there's no expectation of privacy in a chat room necessarily, but that might be one area where folks want to focus a little attention.
We should note, Greg, it's disputed whether the comment that was on that board was the shooter. It was a comment that if you're in the Northwest, don't go to school tomorrow. Apparently, I'm told that that's actually a fairly common sentiment on that board. You want to look into basically hell. That's kind of what that board is, full of just angry young men all telling each other they should do things like this. I'm a pretty big First Amendment absolutist, but I saw that and just a chill ran down my spine. I'm hoping the FBI is monitoring it, and I'm going to probably be writing in the coming days about the question of whether law enforcement authorities, they can monitor it. It's an open chat forum. The question then is, can they get things like IP addresses and things like that to figure out who is typing what? So if somebody types, you know, something like a threatening message, can they figure out who it is and intervene before somebody gets hurt? Some very big, you know, constitutional questions to be sorted out there. But there we go. You know, this is our good martini, everybody.
All right, on to our bad martini now, and obviously less tragic than what happened in Oregon. And our condolences, of course, go to the 10 families of those lost, and certainly of those dealing with wounds and other issues related to the shooting. But the economy is our bad martini today, and the news came out from the Labor Department that in the month of September, the U.S. economy added 142,000 jobs, which is obviously better than adding fewer jobs than that. But the expectation was for slightly over 200,000. The official unemployment rate stayed put at 5.1%. The U6 rate, which also factors in those dropping out of the labor force, is at 10%. And those dropping out of the labor force were closer to 350,000 in the month, so better than 2-to-1 compared to those who actually found work. Jim, still bouncing along the bottom.
You and I have said on this program lots of times that even if, you know, even under the most generous interpretation of this economy, this is not a boom. People don't feel like they're prospering. They don't feel like jobs are plentiful. They don't feel like there's opportunities for advancement. They don't feel like they're building a better future for themselves, as you said, scraping along the bottom. There are a lot. Economists will give you a lot of reasons about what's going on in the global economy right now. We know China recently had some pretty severe problems. The big question is going to be, if we are going into 2016 in a recession, that seems like an X factor. That seems like something people really hadn't expected. You could imagine it helping somebody like Donald Trump. I suppose it's not all that unthinkable it could help somebody like Bernie Sanders. In other words, if you think the electorate is angry now, if we head into recession, or if not recession, then just simply a sputtering economy, more visibly sputtering than in previous months and years, man, this is going to be an ugly electoral cycle in which I think the class warfare and resentment and envy and turning us against each other is going to be worse than ever. And that's this is the thoroughly depressing Rainy Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, isn't it, Greg?
It most certainly.
Give me something crazy.
All right, let's get to something crazy, and it's very crazy indeed. The original story from Al Arabiya. Iranian soccer fans were left reeling earlier this week after eight members of the women's national team were found to be men. Mojtabi Sharifi, described as an official connected to the Iranian Soccer League, said that the footballers, quote, have been playing with Iran's female team without completing sex change operations, unquote. He claimed that some of the men had enjoyed a whole career as female players and only outed themselves just before retiring from their teams. Jim, this is disturbing and delicious in so many different ways since it involves the Iranians here, but obviously deception is a critical part of their national makeup, and apparently even when they stack the team with men, they're still horrible.
Look, even though a good chunk of the women's soccer team pees at the urinal, they would never cheat on a nuclear agreement, right, Greg?
Right.
Some would say, well, they'll cheat on the small stuff. That doesn't mean they cheat on the big stuff. I kind of think the flip side is actually if they're willing to cheat on the little stuff. And in such kind of, it seems kind of outrageous. Like, really? Really? You can't find good female soccer players in Iran? Maybe if you let them take off the burqa, they'd play better. And this is where, like, you know, the Iranian American Friendship Council will say, Jim, they don't all wear burqas. You know. But the bottom line being, like, wow, a place where this can happen, gee, you know, do you understand why people thought verification was so important of this and the whole idea of the waiting period for the inspection of sites and all that stuff? So anyway, yeah, when you watch the Iranian women's soccer team, check out the Adam's apples, check out the knuckles, you know, just look closely and, you know, might find some surprises there.
Jim, which team won the Women's World Cup this year?
Oh, that's right, Team USA.
Yeah, so Iran, our women are way better than your men.
There you go. Well done. I also would point out, I always thought it was strange that the team's musical song when they enter was The Crying Game. And then they changed it to RuPaul. But anyway, on that happy note, let's close out this week, Greg.
We needed that. Jim, have a great weekend. I'll actually be on vacation next week. You will be here for the Three Martini Lunch, and I'll be back with you in a little over a week.
Enjoy your week, Greg, and I look forward to your return.
Thank you, sir. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.